On a warm afternoon in September of 1880, a man named David Lang stepped onto the porch of his Gallatin, Tennessee farm along with his wife, Emma. Nearby, the Lang's children, 8-year-old George and 11-year-old Sarah, were chasing each other around on the grass of the front lawn while farmhands tended to the day's chores. At some point that afternoon, Lang walked across a nearby pasture to check on some quarter horses kept in another field. He was just turning back when a familiar horse and buggy entered the lane leading up to the farm. The buggy belonged to a family friend and a local judge named August Peck. From the porch, Emma Lang waved to the judge. The children stopped their game of tag and hurried out to the edge of the road, anxious to see if the visitor might have brought them a gift. From the far pasture, David Lang also gave a wave toward Judge Peck. Then he started back across the field, angling to meet the judge back at the farmhouse. The pasture was freshly cleared, and Lang moved along easily, always in full sight of his family, the visiting judge, and the workers on the farm. And then, between one stride and the next, he vanished. The immediate thought from onlookers was that Lang had fallen. And then, when they realized that there was no sign of him in the grass, that he had fallen in a hole. That area of Tennessee was, and still is, what's called karst topography. That's an area where both caves and sinkholes are common. So Lang really could have tumbled out of sight down a hole. Only when his family and friends reached the spot where he had disappeared, there was no sinkhole, no cave, nowhere that he might have gone. David Lang had simply vanished. Welcome to Strangest of All. Hi, I'm Mark Sumner. Welcome to episode 6 of this podcast about odd people, weird creatures, and strangeness of all sorts. If you've been listening from the start of the podcast, first off, thanks. You're a genuine rarity. But you might also notice a resemblance between this story and that in episode 1, The Disappearance of Oliver Larch. At the most basic level, both stories are about someone vanishing inexplicably. Even though one involves a young boy in an Indiana winter, and the other an adult in a Tennessee summer, there are features that the stories have in common. The first of these is Frank Edwards. David Lang's vanishing act is the very first story in Edwards' 1959 collection, Stranger Than Science. And there's another similarity in the story's final act. In The Disappearance of Oliver Larch, young Oliver's father hurried out into the snowy evening and hears the eerie sound of his son's voice calling from somewhere above him in the cold winter sky. In the case of David Lang, that role falls to his daughter Sarah. For weeks after the farmer vanishes from a field in full view of multiple witnesses, the Larch farm is overrun by the curious and the skeptical alike. While visitors parade around the farm, Mrs. Larch goes into what's obviously a state of depression. The farm itself becomes overgrown, and farmhands leave for more profitable concerns. It's not until months later, when quiet has settled over what remains of the Lang farm, that 11-year-old Sarah returns to the field where her father made his strange disappearance. There, she finds there's a 15-foot circle of dead and withered grass centered on the exact spot where David Lang took his final interrupted step. Moving into this circle, Sarah hears, faintly and far away, the sound of her father calling and calling for his family. Both the story of Oliver Larch and that of David Lang deal with people disappearing in rural areas of the late 19th century, a location and a period that provided a good dash of nostalgia, and also an all-important dose of obscurity for those who, like Edwards, were retelling the story decades later. However, while the story of Oliver Larch drifting away in that cold Indiana night has at least a few old newspaper accounts to back it up, the same doesn't seem to be true of David Lang. A look into the history of his story doesn't lead back to the 1880s or even the 1940s. The search goes straight back to a story that appeared in Fate magazine in 1953. That story was written by Stuart Palmer, who, when not writing short stories and articles, was a prolific mystery novelist who started writing books in 1930 and kept on publishing right up until his death in 1968. Palmer's most popular character was Hildegard Withers, who was described as a spinster at the advanced age of 39. At the height of Palmer's popularity, his books were serialized in the Los Angeles Times, and Hildegard appeared in a series of movies from RKO Pictures, where she was played by Edna May Oliver, an actress whose specialty seems to have been older women with an acid wit. However, as well known as Palmer might have been at the time, Edwards had absolutely no compunction about essentially lifting his Fate story just 6 years later. It was not only the source of the story Edwards published in Stranger Than Science, but a subject for his radio show a few months earlier. And Edwards wasn't the only one who borrowed Palmer's story. A year before Stranger Than Science appeared, another book called Strange Mysteries of Time and Space was published by British journalist Harold Wilkins. And just like Edwards, Wilkins apparently copied the Fate story almost verbatim. The late 1950s were apparently the golden age of plagiarism. And since all three men, Palmer, Edwards, and Wilkins, passed off the story of David Lang as a genuine historic event, it was also the golden age of, well, since this podcast is on the clean list, let's borrow from Joe Biden and call it malarkey. By the way, I find it a very nice touch that both Edwards' version of Oliver Larch and his take on David Lang managed to slip a judge into the story as a witness, just to give that extra level of malarkey polish. The story of David Lang may not appear to have any actual historic basis, though some investigators who have looked at the story in the last couple of decades have tried to shoehorn in a real person who lived in the area of Tennessee at the time. However, just because the story is just that, a story, doesn't mean it doesn't have history. In creating His Story of David Lang, Palmer seems to have been, inspired by a story that actually did come from the 19th century. That story was The Difficulty of Crossing a Field, published in 1893 by American author Ambrose Bierce. At one time, Bierce's name was frequently mentioned alongside that of Poe and Hawthorne as masters of American horror. His short story, An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, was an almost constant component of high school literature textbooks, and some of his collections were often the subjects of college courses. He was also a careful user of language whose Write It Right, A Little Blacklist of Literary Faults, was the language pedant's guide in those priest drunken white days. However, there's one thing about Bierce's writing that's often overlooked even when he is remembered, and that's that writing fake news was Ambrose Bierce's specialty. The Difficulty of Crossing a Field came from a collection called Can Such Things Be? And was clearly intended to be exactly the sort of brief, brain-itching collection of tales of real occurrences that Edwards provided almost 70 years later. As an example, here are some excerpts from Crossing a Field.
One morning in July 1854, a planter named Williamson, living 6 miles from Selma, Alabama, was sitting with his wife and child on the veranda of his dwelling. Immediately in front of the house was a lawn, perhaps 50 yards in extent, between the house and the public road, or as it was called, the Pike. Between this road lay a close-cropped pasture of some 10 acres, level and without a tree, rock, or any other natural or artificial object on its surface.
As you might expect, Planter Williamson goes off to check some horses and disappears right in the middle of that close-cropped pasture, with several witnesses looking on. In fact, the whole story was written as the testimony of one of those witnesses. So it's clear that plagiarism didn't stop with Edwards and Wilkins lifting Palmer's story from fate, because Palmer's story is just Bierce's story, with a slight change in names, dates, and location. However, after all these fake disappearances, there's a real disappearance to discuss, that of Ambrose Bierce. In October of 1913, the 71-year-old writer left his home in Washington, D.C., for what he told friends was going to be a tour of Civil War battlefields. But if that was what he intended, Bierce had in mind battles a lot more obscure than Gettysburg or Bull Run. By that winter, he was seen in Louisiana, and a couple of months later, in Texas. In December, he dropped across the border into Mexico and visited the army of Pancho Villa. There, he acted as a journalist while observing several battles of the Mexican Revolution. On the day after Christmas, Bierce wrote to a prominent member of the San Francisco literary scene and pioneering female journalist Blanche Partington. In that letter, Bierce was, to put it mildly, a jackass. He and Partington had an extensive history of trading barbs back and forth through the mail. In this note, Bierce was at his barbiest. He demeans Partington's knowledge of geography, spurns her attempts to apologize from their last fight, and in the middle of an extended tirade, informs Miss Partington that she has offended me 77 times and I have overlooked it, but in the letter that angered me, you passed the limit, and I say it with no feeling but regret, you go into the discard. At the very end of this letter, which must have arrived in an envelope still smoking with the heat of the contents, Bierce appends this postscript. I do not know how or when you will get this letter. There are no mails and sometimes no trains to take anything to El Paso. Moreover, I have forgotten your address and shall send this in the care of Laura. And Laura may have gone to the mountains. As for me, I leave here tomorrow for an unknown destination. That destination was unknown then, and it remains unknown today, because Ambrose Bierce disappeared and was never seen again. That's his last communication. Unlike Oliver Larch, David Lang, or Planter Williamson, that disappearance was absolutely real. Thanks for listening to Strangest of All.